Hello there, my name's Alan.
And
I am a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. About 15, 20 minutes ago, somebody was sitting next to me and asked me if I was nervous, and I honestly said no. But that was then. All it takes is a few minutes and I can start thinking. And thinking is one of the most dangerous things I can do. My mind is not my best friend. I want to thank Charlene. You know, there's something so special about being asked to do something like this. I mean, why in the world would anybody ask me? It just seems kind of wild. But it's such a warm feeling to have that occur. And to get here and to meet her was really nice. And then Martha was right there. Actually, I met Martha first. You know, and it just turns out that they're very representative of the rest of the people that we've met here. You know, that there's one of the things that I found when I can walk into any meeting in Al-Anon anywhere is that there's a whole lot of people there, and they're all my friends. I don't know them yet, but they're all my friends. I don't know all of you, but you're all my friends. You know, and it's a nice thing to be able to do that, something I've learned. But today I'm supposed to tell you my story, so I'll start way back when. I have to tell you, though, that my story changes. The facts of it don't change, but my perceptions of it change dramatically. When I was new, if I was sharing, I would have shared about the things my parents taught me, or about the things other people taught me. Today I can't do that because I'm not God and I don't know what's in someone's head. Now, if I'm in a geometry class, I think the teacher's teaching me geometry. That's probably legitimate. But what my mom and dad meant to teach me, I don't know. All I do know is what I learned. You know, and my dad was in World War II. He was in the army, stationed in England, met a lady there, she turned out to be my mom. She came over as an English war bride. And, you know, so some of the things that I learned have to do with some of the things that she knew. Some of my earliest memories are of driving around in a little English Ford Anglia, and I must have been about three, maybe four. Didn't have a radio. My mom would sing to me, you know, to try, I think, to keep me occupied so that I wouldn't get, you know, like kids do. So we were living in San Francisco at the time. We're driving around the little English Ford Anglia, and the song that I remember that she would always sing was, "Had a little drink about an hour ago, and it's gone right to my head." Later on, I found that's an English bar song. But it's one of those things I've never forgotten. When I was young, my mom and dad did drink. Their drinking didn't bother me. That's what they always did. I didn't grow up with a great deal of violence. I grew up in the 1950s, and there were, you know, I mean, I did get spanked. Oh, well. But as the years went by, some of the things in my home, as I go back, I learned that I should never invite a friend over for dinner. I should never have a friend come over to spend the night. It was okay for me to go to their house to do that, but they didn't come to our house to do that. I ended up with a younger brother and a younger sister. They didn't do that either. When I was 17, graduated high school, it seemed that, looking back on it, I can see now that my mom and dad were drinking more than they had earlier, but it still didn't bother me. graduated from high school and I didn't know what to do. That's been actually a factor of my life. I've never really known what to do. I don't have a plan. I've always envied people that knew what they wanted to do, people that knew they wanted to be a doctor or a dentist or a lawyer or a general, whatever. I've pretty much kind of reacted. Anyway, I graduated from high school and I really still don't know what to do. I try a little college, I try a little of this, a little of that. Nothing safe. A friend of mine says, "Hey, why don't we go join the Navy?" Oh, okay. That sounds like a deal. Why not? Vietnam War was heating up, and I thought, well, if I join the Navy, I won't go in the Army, so I wanted to go to Vietnam. So I joined the Navy, and they put me on a ship that went to Vietnam right away. And I was on the ship for about 10 months, and they took me off and sent me to some specialized schooling, and some of that was in Port Hueneme with some Marines, because they were shipping me ashore in Vietnam for a year attached to the Seabees. So I got to spend a year about 10 miles north of Da Nang, right off of Route 1, but on the beach. And I'll tell you, it was quite an experience in lots of different ways. I was there for the first Tet Offensive. At one point, the North Vietnamese Army was right on our perimeter. There was a lot of, people died. But there were other parts of it there, too. I ended up teaching English in a village of North Vietnamese, or South Vietnamese, excuse me. They were South Vietnamese, but they had lived in North Vietnam, moved down because they were Catholic. So I have phonetic books that the Navy gave me so that I could go and spend 3 nights a week teaching English. And for some reason, I wanted to do that. I don't know why, because I would drive down there alone. And I'd have a flak jacket and a helmet and an M16 and a .45. And I'd get there and I'd be all alone in this Vietnamese village. So I took everything off and put it in the corner. I figured if they're going to protect me, great. If not, I'm dead anyway. But one of the gifts of being in Vietnam for that year is that the Navy said I could choose my overseas shore station for my last year and a half in service. I ended up in Spain. So I ended up in Rota, near Cádiz, in Sevilla, in Spain. And I decided that if I'm going to be in Spain, I'm going to do the very best I can. I'm going to learn Spanish, doggone it. I'd taken 2 years of Spanish in high school in California. Grew up in Northern California. And I'd learned almost nothing. Virtually nothing at all. So I get there and I decide I'm going to move out in the town. I do that and I move out in the town. There was a lady that would do my laundry for me and was sort of mothering me in a way, La Tata. And she ended up introducing me to a lady. And that lady didn't speak any English at all. So I took some extension courses from the University of Maryland in Spanish. And began to avoid anything off-duty that was English. I surrounded myself as much as I could in Spanish. And I began to learn it. And I began to do it. And we began to go out and we began to do things. And lo and behold, one day she said she was pregnant. And she said, "I think we ought to get married." Well, it was kind of like when I was asked if I wanted to join the Navy. Well, okay. We'll get married. So, I didn't want to get married while I was in the service. As soon as I was discharged, which was only about a month later, I got discharged in Spain, stayed there, took instruction in Catholicism from a Spanish priest, and we got married in a church over there. Traveled around in Spain for a while, meeting members of her family. It was quite an experience. It turned out that she wasn't alcoholic, to the best of my knowledge. Her family members that I met were not, except for her sister had married one who, well, I can't say he's alcoholic, but let's say he sure drank a lot. Later on, she got a divorce, and getting a divorce in Spain at that time was unusual, and it had to do with his drinking. So I think some of these things are there, and the things that I learned from my parents still did attract me in different ways. It's really strange. I'm not quite sure what are the characteristics of the alcoholic, what are the characteristics of the Al-Anon. I hear in meetings every once in a while that some people do know, but I don't. So we ended up getting married, traveling around, come back over to the United States. I don't know what I'm going to do. I do get a job. Then we end up having another daughter about 2 years later. And I'm going to work. And I'm telling you this part of the story because it's my story, I guess. And the alcohol really hasn't cut into it too much. But my parents had moved to a town called Petaluma in Northern California while I was in the service, so we're living there, and now my parents' drinking bothers me because the words are slurred every night. If we went with my mom to a restaurant at night after 6 o'clock, there was a good chance she'd nod off in her plate. That's irritating, and I found it embarrassing. Anyway, we move out. Eventually, I get a job where I can now move out, and we're doing this. And I've got the two daughters, Susanna, Heather, and we're doing okay. But my wife's name, her name really was Encarnita or Encarnacion, but we called her Maria because it was easier for Americans. You know, she ended up being someone who yelled a lot. She got angry a lot. She didn't understand a lot. She wasn't who I wanted her to be. Now, I thought that once she got over here, learned English, learned some of our ways, the things that we did, the way we thought, she'd change, and she'd become the person I wanted her to be. And she didn't. You know, she really stayed as she was. She did begin to learn English. We spoke Spanish at home for about 10 years. But my two daughters never learned Spanish. I never heard either one of them ever speak one word. They just refused. They wouldn't do it. And I didn't know. I don't know why. I began to really feel like I don't like her. And then I felt guilty, but I didn't like her anyway. And so, you know what, I'm telling you some of this because I'm not proud of some of what I did, some of the things I said and did. So I began having an affair after we'd been married for 9 years. I began having an affair because I really wanted to get away. I wanted to do something different. Met a lady, and she was willing, and so we did. And then I announced I wanted a divorce. I did that on Thanksgiving Day at my parents' house. Why Thanksgiving? I don't know. And my mom didn't like that at all. But I know today that I used the affair to announce the breakup of what I wanted as a marriage, to change it, because it was easier. I was looking to stay away from the pain. I didn't want pain. And being in love, sort of, you know, with this other lady made it easier. I wouldn't recommend it, though. I think what it does is it just stores the pain off to one side where it grows and gets bigger. And when it does come back out, wow. In the end, you know, Maria and I separated. I moved down to Southern California because of a job. But any number of people kept saying, you got to try it again, you got to try it again. So we decided to try it again. So she moved down to Southern California too. We bought another house. We tried it for a little while again, and it was worse. I didn't have another affair. I didn't try to go that route, but I ended up saying, I can't do this. I got to get a divorce. There was a great deal of pain in going through that, and a lot of anger and a lot of, you know, stuff going through that, but did get a divorce. She ends up with custody of the two daughters. I get them every other weekend. And about 2 or 3 years later, I met a lady. And I met her, and she was soft-spoken. She didn't yell and scream. She was a registered nurse, because she was educated, and she spoke English as a native language, didn't speak a word of Spanish. Boy, it sounds like everything I could possibly want. Then she told me she had a year of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. A year, she's cured. So that really, maybe you could teach my mom and dad something. So we end up dating for about a year. And when she's 2 years sober, we ended up getting married. And my two daughters begin to come over and see us every weekend. And part of the reason for that is because I'd been really falling behind on the child support payments. And I really didn't know how to deal with that. But I needed to, so one of the deals what I talked to Maria about was, hey, you know, what if I have the kids every weekend, can I pay you this amount? And she said yes. And so I started doing that and following through on that. But then the two girls, the daughters, Susanna and Heather, would come to us sometimes, and they'd have some bruises. And then they began to tell us stories about being hurt. And Maria had quite a temper, but it never occurred to me that she would really do that. But it hurts. Mom's hurting us. My new wife, Sandy, Sandy was really calm. She was really sweet. She spoke softly until the day we got married. The next morning, she came out and she started yelling at me for, I don't even know what it was today, but she was yelling and screaming and spittle was coming and her hair was flying. And she said, and this is the real me. What have I done? But Sandy was really a complicated human being and really confusing. So the girls are coming over the other weekend, and Sandy said, you know, you really ought to take him to an Al-Anon meeting. You know, there's preteen and Alateen meetings for the kids. And so I started taking him every Wednesday night to a meeting that was in Yorba Linda. One of them went to the Alateen, one went to the preteen. And I did that for probably 2 years. Every once in a while, I'd get there a little early, you know, and I'd be hanging around out there, and some of the people would say, hey, dads are welcome too. And I go, well, I don't really need that. They really enjoyed going. So it was easy to take them. And then Sandy and I are talking about the bruising and things like that. And she says, you know, you really need to do something. And so I got an attorney and I went to court, and I actually ended up getting custody of the two daughters. You know, in the end, what happened was Maria gave up and she signed them over and said, okay. And I'm thinking, okay, everything is really going well now. Susanna is now, the older one, is now 15, and her sister is nine, I guess, then. So anyway, they move in with us, and after about 2 months, Susanna ran away. And she ran away drinking, and she was using, and she was using boys. I found that out from her afterward. You know, she came back a couple of times and said, no, Dad, I don't want to come back. I'm going to, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know, and wow. Well, with Sandy, sometimes I would go with her to a meeting. We were at an AA speaker meeting one time, and just at the break, I go in and get a cup of coffee, and this kind of short guy is right next to me, and he says, you know, hi, we start talking and stuff, and what a nice guy. Well, he ended up being the speaker. His name was Dr. Paul, you know, and, you know, after the meeting, he came back and started talking to me some more. So we exchanged phone numbers and stuff, and we became friends. And when Susanna ran away, I called him. He said, you need to get to Al-Anon right now. So I found an Al-Anon meeting. There was one on Wednesday nights in Yorba Linda. And that was the first meeting that I went to. I started going to some other ones too. This time in going, what would happen is I'd go in, and it was almost all women in the meetings I went to. Once in a while there'd be another guy, but not too often. It really felt good to be there. And I went to those meetings for about 3 or 4 years. I wrote a letter to Susanna, and I based it on things that I learned in the meetings. And I wrote the letter, and I told her that I loved her. But she would not be welcome to come back into my home until she completed a program of recovery. And somewhere along the way, I gave it to somebody who gave it to her. But it was probably 2 years later that I got a phone call. Hi, Daddy. Can I come home? I go, Susanna, where are you? Let me come and get you. Let me see where you are. So I drove out to where she was in, and I did pick her up. And on the, you know, everything in me said I want to bring her home. You know, she's now almost 18. And I don't know what to do with this stuff. Now, in the meantime, I'm living with Sandy and the other daughter, and they're getting along pretty good most of the time. Sandy was really kind, loving, and sweet when she wasn't being angry, yelling, screaming, and mean. So it was really confusing. Going to the Al-Anon meetings that I've been going to, I've been getting to the point where I thought maybe I should end the marriage. Maybe I should get away. But we'd had a son. He came along, you know, so now I've got a little Zachary too. And then, you know, when Susanna called and I went and I saw her and I brought her back and I took her back to where I worked in my office, and I got on the phone and I called people. I called people in Al-Anon, and I called that Dr. Paul, and I said, what do I do? And, you know, one of the things Paul told me to do was call this guy named Clancy, because he might have an idea or two. So I called this guy named Clancy. Some of you may have heard of him, you know. And I didn't, you know, I didn't know who he was. And he did have a couple of suggestions. And after listening to the suggestions all the way around, I ended up telling Susanna that here was the phone book, and I needed her to call a shelter where she could stay. I needed her to find that shelter. So she did. In my office that day, she found a shelter where she could stay, and I took her over to that shelter. And with Clancy's help, I did find a recovery home that would accept her. And it was Sandy's insurance that paid for that time for Susanna to be in recovery. So Susanna's in this recovery thing, and now Sandy and I are both going there for the family nights. Her mom is now beginning to go we'd go one family night, she'd go the other family night. And she seems to be doing well. And the counselors tell us that she's doing well. And she tells me that she's doing well. And I'm really beginning to think, wow, this is kind of neat. And then her mom signed her out. They allowed it. I don't know how come or why. And her mom invited her into her home and kept her there and welcomed her there for about 2 weeks and kicked her out because she was drinking and using it. And so she ended up back in that shelter again. And I spoke with Clancy again, and he had another place in mind. But before that happened, Susanna met a group of Christian people. I'm not sure who they are exactly, where they ever came from, but they were going back up to the Washington area near the Washington-Idaho border, and she wanted to know if she could go with them. She had about 2 weeks to being 18. And I said, well, if that's what you want to do, God bless you. You know, I did reason it out with others. And so she did. And as she was leaving and going to get on a bus to go up there, she turned to me and she said, Daddy, I want you to know I forgive you. And you know what I said? I said, I don't care. I don't know why I said that. I don't know where it came from. But it wasn't my way, I guess, you know? I said, Anyway, she got on the bus and she went up and she ended up getting married, having 3 children. But that's her story in that part. But so I come back and I'm going to some Al-Anon meetings and I've decided that this has got to stop. In the interim, Sandy gets pregnant again and we have another son. But I'm going to the Al-Anon meetings and this marriage is awful. It's terrible. What have I done? You know, so now I'm kind of in a rock and a hard place in the way I'm looking at it. So I did the only thing that was rational in my mind. I quit going to Al-Anon. If I kept going to Al-Anon, I was going to get a divorce. But I could quit it and stop it and not pay attention to that, stay with the marriage, and I'd just work at it harder. And so I did that, and Sandy had 7 years sobriety when she decided to try it again and see what it would be like this time. And, you know, I could come home sometimes and she'd be passed out. I'm not proud of some of this stuff. Sometimes I'd step over her. And stepping over her, I felt so much better than her. I felt superior. At least I'm not doing that. I may be a lousy dad. I may not be able to do this. I may not be able to do that. But I'm not doing that. You know, then Sandy would get sober for a while, and my hopes would skyrocket. And I would think, we're going to make it after all. And it will be okay. We ended up having a third son. And when he was about a year old, Sandy was drunk again, you know. And, you know, it was. I was just about at the end of the rope. But what I did was, I talked to her about it, told her that if she didn't change, a divorce was going to happen. And so she said, well, you know, I don't think I want to be married to you anyway. Well, wait a minute. See, that hurt. It wasn't my idea. You know, it was out of my control now. I ran back to Al-Anon. And what was happening was Sandy was going back to meetings and she was beginning to get better and I was getting worse. But I kept running back to the Al-Anon meetings, and this time I determined that I was going to go there and I was going to get a sponsor, I was going to work the steps, and I was going to be a newcomer. So when they said anybody new, I raised my hand. I knew, so today I would tell you I've got 24 and a half years in Al-Anon. You know, I don't have when I first started. I still have those experiences and what I learned, but I didn't really work the Al-Anon program until just over 24 years ago. What happened is I'm going to the meetings. Sandy decided to move out of the house. So we had a home in Anaheim. I've got three kids. My younger daughter from the first marriage is living with us too. She's got a girlfriend there too. I've got the three little boys. Two of them are going to school. The youngest isn't ready for school yet, but two of them are going to school. The house is now in foreclosure because Sandy's not helping make any payments. In fact, she's not working. And I'm scared to death. I don't know what's going to happen. I ended up filing for bankruptcy, and my daughter in Washington, Susanna, gave me a call. Daddy, my husband is beating the kids. He's abusing them. Can we move in with you? Sure. Of course you can. But I have to tell you, I don't know for how long, because I don't know how long I'll have the house. I don't know how long we'll live there. She showed up. And we had a big dog, too. His name was Bear. And she brought her dog, too. So I forgot. So now I've got my three sons, the daughter, her girlfriend, the dog and the cat that we had, too. Her dog, her, Susanna, and her three kids. And I'm going to work and trying to get to meetings. And, I really believe my life was completely falling apart, just absolutely and totally falling apart. But the only thing I could do would be to go to a meeting, and I could talk to my sponsor, and I could start working the steps. And that was what I had to do, and that's what I did. And then the house does face foreclosure, and so Susanna needs to do something. So what Susanna does is, it turns out she's meeting some guy, not her husband, somebody else. I go, what? And she says, yeah, don't worry, my husband's coming down to pick up the boys. Well, wait a minute, I thought he was abusing him. Well, maybe not really. I don't know what's going on. So her husband came down and he picked up her kids. My older daughter moved out on her own. She was able to do that. And I moved into an apartment with three sons. For the very first time in my life, I needed to find a place to live in an apartment. And I left the house one day and I said, okay, God, please come with me. Please come with me. I have nowhere to go. I don't know how to get there. I filed for bankruptcy. That's in the record. I don't know who'll take, And so I got in the car by myself and I started to drive and I followed these inside feelings of where to go for the very first time. And I stopped at a place and I ended up finding a place where it was a three-bedroom, two-bath, and a ground floor, which was good with three little boys. And I told them the truth. And they said, that's okay. We'll take it. And so I got to move in there. There was a grammar school within walking distance. So we moved into this apartment. We're going through the divorce. I end up with every other week custody initially, but primary custody of the boys. But by the time the school year has started, their mom has given up and I have full custody. So now I've got full custody of the boys. I'm not quite sure at all how to be a full-time father or even a part-time father. But I'm getting them to school. There's so much to learn for me. I had so much to learn. I'm taking the kids to school every morning. I get up early. I have to make them lunches. The littlest one's going to kindergarten now. I drive them to school, get them in to the classes, but the first day or two we're there on time and everything's working out okay, and then the next day we're late. Well, if you ever take the kids to school at a grammar school and you're late, you can't just drop them off. You got to go into the business office, get a pass, go to each class, get them in, and it took extra time. Then I had to go to work. that happened for like 3 days in a row, and every day I'm getting up 15 minutes earlier so that it'll be okay. Hurry up, guys, get up, let's go, push, shove, you know, gotta make it. And, you know, the fourth day, I get there, we're late. I'm walking, after getting him into the class, I'm walking by the business office, and the secretary says, "Mr. Rich, we're gonna have to do something about this." And I wanted to hit her, you know, and didn't she know? You know, I'm driving on home, or driving on to work, and I'm thinking about it. And I'm thinking, what in the world do I do? And for one of the, this has happened to me a few times now. A voice will pop into my head. And it's, "Alan, you're doing it all wrong. You're just doing it all wrong. You have to let them know you love them." Well, what I did was I stopped thinking. One of the things that I'd begun to do, but I hadn't done it as much, is my mind is my worst enemy. So I'm driving to work, and I've got a 45-minute drive to work and home. That's plenty of time to think. That's plenty of time to get afraid. That's plenty of time to focus on the problems and let them get bigger. You know, so I started off with cassettes of 12-step talks. I'd put them in the car, and I'd listen to a 12-step talk all the way. I wouldn't get in the car if I didn't have a 12-step talk. Might be the same 12-step talk that I've heard 10 times, 20 times before. It didn't matter. I had to listen to a 12-step talk. It could be Al-Anon, it could be AA. It didn't matter, a 12-step talk. I could hear solutions. I may not recognize them yet, but I could hear solutions and get new things in my head by listening to that. If I listen to my brain, it's just the same old stuff going around and around. So I was listening to something, and I don't even know what it was. I don't know who it was. I don't know what it was said, but I got an awareness. So the next morning, I woke up. "Good morning, Zachary. I love you. I'm so glad you're my son. It's a beautiful day outside. Good morning, Cam. I love you. I'm looking forward to the day with you. Good morning, Alex. I love you. Can't wait to get out there today with you." And every day for years after that, I woke them up saying, "I love you." Every single day. This morning when I woke up, the alarm went off, and I woke up and I rolled over and, "Good morning, Kathy. I love you." I don't ever want to forget that. I don't ever want to change that. It was one of the great lessons in my life that I learned to change the focus to love. And love is action, not thinking. It's not emotion. It's things to do. So I began to do that with my sons, and it was a great gift to me. When my oldest son was 16, I decided that telling him, waking him up saying "I love you" was probably stupid and he wouldn't like it. I decided for him, so I stopped doing it. About 2 weeks later, we were in the car driving together, and he goes, "Hey Dad, remember when I was a little kid, you used to always wake me up saying you love me?" That was really cool. So I had to go back and do it again. The next day, probably the next day, 2 days, we were still late, but then we weren't again. A couple of weeks later, the older son said, "Hey Dad, could we make our own lunches so you don't have to?" "Well, sure." My youngest said, "Hey Dad, if you set the clothes out, I get dressed by myself." I started setting the alarm about a half hour later. Yeah. And I'd started two new things. I'd started listening to 12-step talks in the car, and I'd started waking my children up saying I love them. I had a young lady named Chelly who had come in. She didn't speak too much English, but one of the wonderful things about Spanish and English is they share a few words, and one of them is no. You know, so if you're an adult and you've got little kids, know it's a good word to know. And she'd come in and watch them until I got home. Well, I get home and, you know, three boys, the place is not spotless. There'd be food spilled, things there that you know, and I'd come in and I would start right away with, all right, who did that? Who did this? Who did that? You got to fix this, clean that up. What? And I'd doing this for probably the fourth or fifth time in a couple of weeks, and that voice came back in my head, and it was, don't nag, scold, and complain. Well, I immediately corrected the voice and told him that only applies to alcoholics. And the voice said, no, it doesn't. It applies to everybody. So I had to make amends to my children, you know, for my reaction to things not being in my control and not going my way. But it was a good lesson there too. You know, their mom ended up one day, she got sober. I have no idea today if their mom, you know, where she's at exactly, but she ended up getting a job again, and she was sober at least for a while. And she was in Texas, flew out there for some training. She came back, and when I picked up the kids, they all said, hey, Dad, I want to show you what Mommy got me, you know, and they all had an airline blanket. And the oldest one said, yeah, Dad, yeah, she stole them from the airline, but that's okay, everyone does it. Yeah. Well, before I walked up here, I asked God to walk with me. I asked God if he could help give me the words that he would like me to tell you. I'm not a good choice of those words, a judge of those words, I don't know. That was one of the first times where I asked God to put the words in my mouth to use, because I didn't know. But at the same time, I didn't want to let it go. And so I told him that, you know, I think it's wonderful that your mom loves you so much she wanted to give you a gift. I do want to say one thing, though. In my life, I do things a little different. If something belongs to me, it belongs to me. And if something doesn't belong to me, then it does not belong to me, and I cannot take it. And then I let it go. To this day, I have no idea if that was the right thing, but it felt right. It felt good. It felt good to ask God for that help. It really felt good. You know, the boys are beginning to grow up. The daughter who, Susanna, who had her issues and sent her three kids back up north, she ended up getting a divorce. Her husband got custody of the kids. She ended up getting married again in Las Vegas and then got a divorce again. I got a phone call from her mom that she was in a hospital out there, and they didn't expect her to live through the night. She'd taken too many pills. So I drove out there all night and asked God to be with me again. And, you know, as I'm driving out there, the only memories I've got are of her as a real little girl. She was a beautiful little girl, you know, and that's all I'm thinking of. And sometimes it's hard to drive because the tears are coming and I don't know what I'm going to find. When I did get to that hospital in Las Vegas and the nurses are there, and they said, we're so glad you're here because we don't think she's going to make it. So I sat there with her, and I don't remember a lot about it, you know, but she did pull through. She did come to. And I remember talking to her about it and saying, Susanna, you know, what happened? She said, well, Daddy, they tell me that I took a whole bottle of pills, and that's not true. I only took one. Somebody else must have given me all the rest. And, you know, by that time I had enough Al-Anon to know that I needed to love her. And that was my job. It was to love her. You know, when I went back into Al-Anon, there was a lady going to some of the meetings that I was going to. She's sitting right there. Her name's Kathy. And I became aware of her because, boy, was she angry. You know? A lot of angst. Boy, she'd share and she was pissed. But I'm going to the meetings now for 2 or 3 years, and I've got a sponsor, and then he ends up saying one day, "Hey, Alan, you know, I think it's time for you to consider dating again." And I go, "Are you sure?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, I have no idea what to do." He said, "Well, you know, you could go, you know, what about Ruth? What about the, or Kathy?" You know, I said, "Kathy? What Kathy?" He said, "Oh, you know, pretty Kathy." "Huh? Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess she is pretty." I had never noticed because I only saw the anger initially. Well, it turned out that one of the meetings that we went to, the meeting often went someplace afterwards and you know, for a snack or a movie or something like that. And I found that I was often sitting next to her or across from her. And I thought, well, that's cool. I thought it was just a coincidence until later on I found out that she kind of helped that along when I did. But I remember one day I asked her if I could get her phone number. Now, I had her number from the phone lists and stuff, but I wanted to ask her if I could get her phone number because I was thinking that just seemed like the right thing to say. And she said she wasn't interested in romance, so no. And I went, "Oh, okay." And you know what? It didn't hurt because I'd been talking to God every night. I'd been saying, "Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for another day of loving. Thank you, God. And God, you know, I would really like to have another relationship. And if it could be Kathy, that'd be great. But if it's got to be somebody else, well, that's okay too." You know? I'm learning to do things different. I don't know what you guys teach people, but boy, I was learning stuff. And about, I don't know if it was 2 months later, 4 months later, 6 months later, we're at that same meeting and they're going to go someplace and she goes, "Oh, I don't really want to go there." So I said, "Well, okay, you want to go with me over there?" And she said, "Yeah." Well, that was the beginning of us seeing each other on a regular basis, you know, that was kind of cool. But you see, Kathy wasn't exactly the way I wanted her to be either. I wasn't ready yet. I didn't know that. You know, Kathy and I have broken up, I think, 3 times over 21 or 22 years, where we'd stopped seeing each other. The last time was about 13 years ago, and boy, was that painful. That hurt again. One more time, my life is falling apart. But every time I think my life is falling apart, I'm wrong. It's falling together. I just haven't gotten to that part yet. So I'm going back to some different meetings and I'm listening to different things and I'm learning that more and more about what is love. I was at a meeting just this morning and someone was talking about listening. And listening is one of the greatest gifts we can give another. Listening is an act of love. I didn't know that, but listening is an act of love. And then what I'm doing is I'm going to these different meetings and Kathy is saying the things she's saying. And what I found out is that I could love Kathy every day for the rest of my life, whether she loved me or not. It had nothing to do with her. It had to do with me and my choice. Love was a choice I could make. And I chose to love her just the way she was. She didn't have to be a little bit different. She didn't have to change this attitude a little. She didn't have to respond this way. I got to learn to love her just exactly as she is. Now, being a human being and a guy, I'm not perfect at that. I get irritable periodically, you know. But when I'm irritated, I've learned, you know, in the big book, it's got a little thing in there. There's a spot where it says if you know, if I'm irritated, you know, what is it? How does it go? Something about if I'm feeling irritable, there's something wrong with me. Well, you know what? When I'm irritable, when there's something wrong with me, and I need to look to me to change me. What do I need to do different? You know, Kathy has been one of the greatest blessings in my life. You know, I am so grateful for her, and I'm so grateful for the things that I've gotten to learn through her and with her. You know, I listening to all these different talks through the years, I got to hear some wonderful, wonderful things. Many of them pissed me off the first time I heard them. I heard a guy, it was an AA speaker, and he said, the only emotional pain a human being feels is the pain of not getting their way. That was not a nice thing to hear. Not when I was feeling some pain. But it turns out to be absolutely true. Every time I'm in pain, it's because I'm not getting my way. Every single time. 3 years ago, on a Tuesday night, I was driving toward... normally on Tuesday nights, I meet with my sponsor, and then we go to a meeting. But on this Tuesday night, he wasn't able to make it, so I was going to stop at a restaurant, pick up something, take it home, then go to the meeting. I got a call from Maria, that first wife, and I couldn't understand what in the world she was saying. But it turned out what she was trying to tell me was that Susanna had just died. She'd taken an overdose of methamphetamine and died. And my first thought was, of course, no, it can't be. And then, yes, it is. But I have learned that right behind me it says seek. I want to be a seeker. I want to seek things. But what I want to seek is I want to seek the good. I want to seek solutions. I want to seek love. I'll find whatever I look for. If I look for what's going to hurt, I'll find it. If I look for the good in any event, I can find it, but I have to look for it. I have to be willing to look for it. So I began to look for the good in Susanna's death as I'm driving. And I said nice things, kind things, loving things to Maria. There was good in Susanna's death from the standpoint of bringing members of the family closer together. That Wednesday meeting that I used to take her to, I go to today. And it was that Tuesday night I got to go to the men's stag meeting that I normally attend, and I got to share what was going on. I made a phone call to the secretary of the, I happen to know who the secretary was, remember that, the next day at that Wednesday meeting, and there was no leader. That never happens at that meeting. There's 40, 45, 50 people that go to that meeting. There's always a leader. There was no leader signed up, so I asked if I could lead. And before I got to the meeting, I stopped and I bought several dozen really nice cupcakes. And I took them to the meeting, and I shared some of the story of Susanna having attended that meeting in Alateen years ago. And her death, and that today I was going to celebrate her first day of sobriety. And I have a little 2-year chip in my car. On October 7th, I have a 3-year chip I'll replace it with, because I would like to look on it as her years of being clean and sober, being so, you know, and I need to look at it that way, because there's good in that, you know. And I can understand that. And that's the things that I've learned here. Now, I didn't come up with anything that I've said tonight. I didn't come up with it. It's not an original with me. I heard it from you. I heard it from one of those 12-step talks. You know, all I can do is just try to listen and learn. You know, and God's not done with me yet. you know? I know he's not. Last February, all of a sudden, all the hearing in this year just went down. In 2 days, it was gone. Now, some of it's come back, but it's not back more. My hearing sucks. But you know what? But I have to look for the good in it. Because it's so hard to hear everything that you say often. I have to really focus on listening and to really recognize how very important it is to hear you. Because every one of you has something to tell me. It doesn't matter how new you are or even if you're not a member. You know, God can speak through anyone to me. And I just really want to learn to listen better. And I think that's part of what God's teaching me, is to learn to listen better, to focus better. You know, there's so many things that have happened in my life that I'm not proud of me and my actions, but nothing would I change. Nothing. Because I love who I am today and who I'm becoming. I like it. I'm more comfortable today than I've ever been in my life. I love the lady I'm with immensely. I love coming to meetings. I love being a part of this. It's the greatest time of my life. And I needed the seemingly bad as well as the seemingly good to end up where I'm at. I need all of this stuff. Anyway, I'm really grateful to have been here tonight, and thank you all for loving me and listening.